The Seven Churches.
When Paul wrote his first letter to the Corinthians in chapter 2, verse 9, he used words that I think are very familiar to all of us. He said, "Eye has not seen, neither ear heard, neither has entered into the heart of man the things that God has prepared for them that love him." And in verse 10, "But God has revealed them unto us by his Spirit." Well, how does the Spirit reveal such things unto us? We would suggest it does through the Word of God, which includes the seven messages to the churches that we have recorded in Revelation chapters 2 and 3. They contain an extensive list of the things that God has prepared for those that love Him. Almost no commentator believes that these messages were meant for the specific churches in Asia at that time. But there have been two viewpoints that have been suggested as a way of interpreting them. First, that each message describes a distinct phase of the gospel age, or the time of the development of the Christian church since Christ. And you could understand why this particular interpretation might be suggested, because as we read these messages, we find that near the end, at the third chapter, verse 20, he is saying, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock." All the other, it was, "I come quickly." So that shows the progression. And also, in the interpretation of seals and trumpets, some have suggested that that looks at the gospel age as a whole, and then why not the messages to the churches as well. But I'd like to suggest that the messages to the churches can also be looked at as applying in their entirety to the gospel age period, to all true Christians whenever they lived, whether it was 2,000 years ago or whether it's you and I living today. Every message to the churches ends with the words, "He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches," plural. Let everybody hear what the Spirit is saying through these messages. If we have open ears, we are told that we should hear all the message and not just the one that we may think applies to our own particular period in the gospel age. Think about it. Is there any promise that you consider unimportant? Revelation 2, verse 7, "To him that overcometh will I give to eat of the tree of life." Verse 11, the promise is, "He shall not be hurt of the second death." Verse 17, message 3, "I will give to eat of a hidden manna. I will give him a white stone." Message 4, verse 26, "Power over the nation." Chapter 3, message 5, verse 5, "He'll be clothed in white raiment. I will not blot out his name from the book of life." Next message, verse 12, "I'll make a pillar in the temple of my God. I'll write the name of my God upon him." And verse 21, "I will grant for him to sit with me in my throne." Any of those messages that you wouldn't particularly like? I don't think so at all. All of those messages are very precious promises. They are some of the good things that God has in reservation for those that love him. Now, those good things of God, however, are conditional. We have consecrated our all to God and are carrying out the terms and the conditions of that covenant of sacrifice. The good things that have been promised to the churches that we've rehearsed in these examples are only going to be ours if we resist the pitfalls. And what are those? Ephesus, in verse 4 of chapter 2, "You have left your first love." Pergamos, verse 14, "There are some there that hold the doctrine of Balaam." Thyatira, in verse 20, "You suffer that woman Jezebel to teach and to seduce my servants." Sardis, chapter 3, verse 2, "I have not found thy works perfect before my God." Verse 11, Philadelphia, "Hold fast that which thou hast, that no man take thy crown." And finally, in Laodicea, verse 16, "Because you are lukewarm, I will spew thee out of my mouth." The very first commandment that was given to the Israelites, thou shalt have no other gods before me. And that principle echoes down through the corridors of time from Moses through the gospel age and yes, right here into 1984. It's a theme in these messages. A reminder that the world, the flesh, the devil, our own desires will try to get us to replace God with something else. That's why the commandment was, no other gods before me. And the examples that we have here in the messages to the churches that we must be on the alert for is leaving our first love for something that momentarily, at least, seems to be better. Or Balaam's doctrine, that is, turning one's relationship with God into earthly gain. Jezebel, a leader who instituted a worship of a false god instead of the true God. And then immature works from immature Christians. Losing one's crown through a lack of attention. And abundance of earthly good things that leads, unfortunately, to a lukewarm condition. Those are the temptations that are placed before all of us. They are not unique to any one time or period during the gospel age. And so let us all make fresh resolves to resist all of these temptations so that we will eventually receive all the good things promised to those who overcome. He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches. In that opening chapter of Revelation, in verse 3, we have a unique promise made here to those of us that consider this book. It says, blessed are they that hear the words of this prophecy. There's more to it than that. Hearing is fine, but that verse, Revelation 1:3, ends with, and keep those things that are written therein.